This show is supported by State Farm. You have insurance for your home, your health, and your car. Why don't you have insurance for your small business? So many small business owners think they don't need or don't even know about small business insurance. Protecting a source of revenue is one thing, but so is protecting all of your hard work and your team members. State Farm agents are all small business owners too, so they know how to help small business owners choose personalized policies that fit their budgets. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to 1001 Stories from the Old West and two episodes of Frontier Gentlemen, starring John Daner.
In a card game, aces and eights are known throughout the West as a dead man's hand. There's a good reason for it, and this is the story of how the hand got its name.
Frontier Gentlemen. Herewith, an Englishman's account of life and death in the West. As a reporter for the London Times, he writes his colorful and unusual stories. But as a man with a gun, he lives and becomes a part of the violent years in the new territories. Now starring John Daner, this is the story of J.B. Kendall, Frontier Gentleman.
I left Fort Benton, Montana Territory, in a little river steamer called the Pride of the West. The journey downstream on the Missouri was a good deal faster than that which I had made coming up from St. Louis just a few months earlier. I decided to write some articles for the London Times on river travel in the American West, but the balmy weather, coupled with a feeling of complete indolence, made me put off all thought of work. Several days passed, and then we docked at Fort Pierre in Dakota Territory. I went ashore to purchase a new pair of boots, and it was in the store of an outfitter named Judd Scott that I first heard the name of Deadwood. Well, the left one might be a bit tight. Yes, right here, in the heel.
Oh, she'll ease up, mister. Of course, I don't do much trade in ready-mades. If you had more time, I'd make you a real fine pair, finest in Dakota Territory. Here, let me take it off. I'll try and work it out. So you're a newspaper correspondent, huh? Well, we've had them come through, but none from England. Must be pretty interesting, your line of work.
Yes, it is, quite.
Yeah, too bad you ain't staying around these parts. Your folks back home would get a pleasure out of reading about things we got around here.
You mean in Fort Pierre?
Well, there ain't too much going on here. I guess you could write about Jack McCall, though. Try it on now. It
All
should
right.
be better.
Jack McCall, huh?
He used to drive a stage between here and Deadwood. Got some tall yarns to spin about Indians and the like. Go ahead. Take a walk now.
Yes, I'd like to meet him.
He's back in Deadwood now. How's that? That better?
Yes, fine. Where is Deadwood?
You mean you ain't heard of it? Ooh, worst bunch of cutthroats and outlaws living in all the territories, and the United States is in Deadwood. They even got Wild Bill Hickok out there. I hear tell there's folks wanting to put him up for marshal.
Hickok? Yes, I've heard of him.
Yeah, it won't take Wild Bill long to clean up, I can tell you.
Deadwood, huh?
Oh, you taking the boots?
I'm taking them. I sold the remainder of my ticket to a man booking passage for St. Louis. and the next day took the stage from Fort Pierre to Deadwood in the Black Hills of Dakota Territory. At the stagecoach station in Deadwood, I inquired after Jack McCall and was directed to Carl Mann's saloon. Even though it was Sunday, I was surprised to see that the place was practically empty. A hatchet-faced woman dressed in black was drinking alone at the bar, and I found McCall, a broken-nosed, sullen-looking man, sitting at a table playing a game of solitaire.
Yeah, that's me. Who's asking to know?
J.B. Kendall.
What's your business, J.B. Kendall?
Well, a gentleman in Fort Pierre mentioned your name. He runs the general store.
Judd Scott?
Yes, that's right.
How come you want to talk with me?
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm a newspaper correspondent, and I thought there might be a story to write about Deadwood, and your friend suggested that I get in touch with you.
What kind of story are you thinking about?
I understand that Wild Bill Hickok is in town. Do you know him?
Mm-hmm. Why don't you ask her?
Hmm?
Or at the bar. Calamity Jane. Figures she knows him better than most.
Oh, well, thank you, I will. Perhaps I can buy you a drink after?
Suit yourself. I ain't going nowhere.
Miss Jane?
You talking to me? The name's Calamity. Ain't no miss in it. Calamity Jane.
I'm sorry. I'm J.B. Kendall. The gentleman over there mentioned that you were a good friend of Wild Bill Hickok.
Who? Why, that ain't no gentleman. That's a stinking pig by the name of Jack McCall. You've been sitting with him. Don't foul up the air around me. Hit the trail, mister.
I was hoping you could introduce me to Mr. Hickok.
Hey, you English?
Yes.
Thought so. Knew an English feller down in Abilene. Wouldn't quit riding herd on me. Had to shoot him.
Oh.
New in town, ain't you?
Just arrived.
You ain't friend of McCall?
Oh, I only met him a few minutes ago.
What brings you?
I'm a writer. Newspaper articles for the London Times.
Hey, I guess you heard about me and Wild Bill, huh?
Oh, yes.
Fastest man with a gun you'll ever see. I ain't too bad myself, but I ain't nothing to Wild Bill. Come on over to the table, bring the bottle, and I'll tell you about me and Wild Bill.
Calamity Jane was a strange, almost masculine-looking woman, hard and rough-voiced. She told me of her exploits as a scout with General Crook's army in the war against the Sioux, but most of the time she spoke of Hickok. About a half an hour had passed when I noticed Jack McCall get up from his table and come toward us.
Yes, sir. What Wild Bill done in Abilene, there ain't another man could have handled. Why,
he... mister, I thought you was going to buy me a drink.
Oh, not just now, Mr. McCall. I'm talking to the lady.
Oh, yeah, I see. It's mostly listening. Ain't nobody gets to talk much around her.
McCall, you want me to put your eyeballs out with this bottle? You open that barn door of yours just once more.
Kendall, you come on down to Boot Hill Saloon when you're through. I'll tell you the truth about that female polecat there in a windy train.
One of these days, me or Wild Bill's gonna pump that coyote full of lead. Except he ain't worth wasting a ball on.
And all I know about him is that he used to drive the stage between here and Fort Pierre.
Yeah, lost that job because he couldn't hold his liquor. Used to be a buffalo hunter till the feller he worked for caught him stealing hides. He ain't no good, that one, and his pals is worse. You ever run into Tim Brady or Johnny Varnes, you watch your step, mister. Them's two of the boys, along with McCall, that Wild Bill's gonna run out of this town when he gets to be marshal.
Where is Wild Bill now?
He's up in the hills working on his claim. Him and his partner, Colorado Charlie. They ought to be back by tomorrow. He'd like to meet you, mister. Wild Bill always had a liking for you newspaper fellers. Well, what's your hurry? Sit down. We'll split another bottle.
Thank you, but now I think I'd better get settled.
wash some of this Dakota dust off.
What a dude. All right, go on up the hotel. Tell him Calamity Jane sent you, and if they don't give you the best room, I'll shoot up the place.
The recommendation was most effective. I got the best room in the hotel. 2 hours later, in spite of Calamity Jane's warning, I wandered down to the Boot Hill Saloon. I was curious about McCall and what he might have to say about Calamity and Wild Bill Hickok. I found him there, very drunk. He was talking to a heavy-set man who was chewing on an unlit cigar. McCall greeted me as an old friend.
Hey, what do you say, Colonel? You had enough of that female windbag, huh? Hey, Tim. Tim, this is the fellow I was telling you about. The Colonel's his name. Kendall.
Hi. How are you? Tim Brady.
I owe Mr. McCall a drink. I came down to settle my debt.
Oh, that's real fine of you, Kendall. Oh, Jim Kendall's come to Deadwood to write a story about Wild Bill Hickok, the new marshal of Deadwood.
You go get yourself a drink, McCall.
Sure, Tim.
Take a chair, Kendall.
New marshal of Deadwood.
I wouldn't pay no heed to what McCall says. Not when he gets too much whiskey in him.
Did he say something?
About Hickok being marshal.
Oh, well, it's not particularly news. I heard that in Fort Pierre 5 days ago.
Well, don't you believe it.
Huh?
Fellas around here, they don't want his kind. You go writing in your paper a thing like that, you're going to have to turn right around and write that it ain't true.
He's not going to get the job?
No. I tell you, he does a lot of ear greasing, like that crowbait mare, Calamity Jane. But all them things you hear is just a lot of brag. Hickok never plugged a man unless the feller's back was turned. I was down to Abilene when he dried Gulfville coal. This is the worst thing you ever seen. Shot him in the back. Then by mistake, he goes and kills his own pal, Mike Williams. No, sir. Deadwood ain't gonna put up a man like that for Marshall. You think so?
Oh, I don't know. I suppose it depends on how many want him.
Oh, well, there's a lot of them miners up the hill. They're the ones. Figure he's a real big man. Heard all them crazy stories about him. You want to know what I think?
I'd be very interested.
I don't think he'd last 2 minutes as marshal before somebody shot the daylights out of him. Yes, your best thing for Hickok to do is get out of Deadwood and stay out. You see him, you tell him that.
The next night, Calamity Jane introduced me to Wild Bill Hickok. He looked older, more tired than I'd imagined him. As we sat in his room, I noticed that he blinked his eyes, rubbed them, and seemed quite nervous. Constantly glanced toward the door. Calamity had gone out to buy some food.
Me and Colorado Charlie had a rough week up in the hills. Feels kind of good to get back. You ever done any mining, Kendall?
No, no.
Well, have you ever had the idea to get somebody else to do the work for you? Well, what do you think of Deadwood?
Oh, I haven't been here very long.
Ain't much like London, I'll bet.
No, it isn't.
Well, do a little cleaning up like I did in Hayes City in Abilene. We'll have a right nice little town.
When do you expect to begin as marshal?
Any day now, the boys are getting things moving.
I saw a man yesterday, Tim Brady.
Brady?
And he asked me to give you a message.
Huh?
The best thing for Hickok to do is to get out of Deadwood and stay out.
Well, that's what he said, huh?
Yes.
You know why? They're afraid of me. They know what's going to happen after I get sworn in. I run them out, and if they don't run, we have a showdown. Brady and his pal Varnes ain't got stomach for that.
I gather they're the somewhat unsavory element in Deadwood, is that so?
Mister, you ain't just milking pigeons. Why, them miners up in the hills would be dead ducks for Brady and his gang if it weren't for me. This is the worst mining camp in the territory. Ain't been no law here since it started, and Brady don't want none. That's how come the miners want me for marshal, protection.
Well, I'm surprised he hasn't tried to get rid of you before this.
That jayhawker knows what had happened to him in a shoot-up. He ain't likely to try nothing. A fellow like that gets somebody else to do his dirty work.
Oh, it's only me, Bill. Put away the gun.
I told you, Charlie, you ought to knock.
Keep forgetting.
This is J.B. Kendall. He's going to write a story about me for an English paper.
Yeah, I run into Calamity down to Carl's place, and she told me. Nice to meet you, Kendall.
And you, sir.
My old pal, Charlie Utter.
Colorado Charlie's good enough.
Kendall's been talking to Brady.
Oh, that's so? Rest your saddle, Bill. You make me tired standing.
Brady said I ought to get out of town.
Oh, he'd like that fine.
Yeah, he'd like that. Well, I guess I'll go and wash up before Calamity gets back. You staying around, Charlie?
Yeah, I thought maybe we'd go down to Carl's later and play some cards.
All right. I'll be right back.
Sure. Got a lot on his mind, has Wild Bill. He ain't usually like this.
He seems to have trouble with his eyes.
Oh, you noticed, huh? I wouldn't want you to say nothing in front of Bill, but he's been scared he's going blind. Yeah, things sure don't seem like the old days. Oh, I gotta get these boots off. My feet's killing me.
How old is he?
Wild Bill? Yeah, let me see. 39. Of course, to hear him talk, you'd think he's closer to 60. I sure do fret over him sometimes. Always talking about dying, this and that. He ain't like the old days. He sure was a rip snorter. Oh, well, maybe when he gets to be marshal again, everything will be like it always was.
Calamity Jane came in with the food, and behind her, Bill Hickok. It was a strange supper. Both Colorado Charlie and Calamity kept up a stream of conversation, anecdotes singing the praise of Hickok's past accomplishments, but the atmosphere was strained. The man with the long hair didn't say very much. Afterwards, Charlie Utter invited me to accompany them to the saloon. I noticed that Hickok was reluctant. Possibly he had a feeling, a warning of what was to come. It was 8 o'clock when we arrived at Carl Mann's saloon and sat down at the card table.
Charlie, change seats with me. I ain't sitting with my back to the door.
Wild Bill, you're getting worse than an old woman.
Well, maybe so, but that's the way it is. I like to see what's coming in.
Well, here. Yeah, take my place if you like.
Yeah, no, sir. All he wants is a catbird seat. That's how come he's always winning. You ain't moving, Bill.
You got the right idea, Charlie. Wild Bill, you got your seat, and that's the way it's gonna be. Carl! Bring us a bottle of whiskey and a deck of cards. Marshal Hickok's gonna be the big loser tonight.
After a few minutes, we were joined by a miner, and the five of us played. It was a friendly game, and we could see Hickok beginning to relax. He was a good player and held more than his share of winning hands. But while the game went on, there was something happening down the street in the Boot Hill Saloon. We didn't know it then, but after it was too late, we heard what had taken place. Three men sat in a back room, one of them drinking heavily. This was Jack McCall. The other two were Tim Brady and Johnny Varnes, the leaders of the Tufts in Deadwood.
Well, I'm telling you, Jack, you'll be a big man.
Well, they'll look at you when you walk down the street. They'll say, there goes Jack McCall. He killed Wild Bill Hickok.
Now, you hear what Johnny says?
Yeah, I hear. Give me another drink, Jack.
Well, sure. He's in Carl's place right now. You could get him easy.
Oh, might not be so easy.
Well, you ain't afraid, are you, Jack?
No, I ain't afraid.
No.
No. No, I ain't afraid, but it just won't be so easy.
Of course, we could get somebody else to do it. We just figured, Tim and me, we figured you was the man for the job.
No, look, I ain't saying I won't do it.
You know what we could do, Johnny?
What?
We could maybe get that newspaper feller, you know, Kendall, to write something about Jack in his paper.
Hmm?
How'd you like to see that, boy, in an English paper? Jack McCall shoots down Wild Bill Hickok.
Yeah, you could go on the stage all over with that. Sure.
Yeah. He's right down the street, Jack. Yeah, I seen him myself. You know what? He's sitting with his back to the door.
I listen. Just listen, how come if you was there, you didn't plug him yourself?
Yeah, it ain't no use, Johnny. He don't understand. All right.
No, forget no, wait it, a minute. I'm just asking, that's all. Now, just tell me how come.
Because Calamity Jane and Colorado Charlie is with him. If they saw me, they'd know something was wrong. But not you, Jack. They wouldn't figure you drawing on Hickok.
Yeah. That makes sense. That's all I wanted to know was why.
All right. What do you say, Jack?
Sure, why not? Sure.
Give him a gun, Johnny. And don't you miss, boy, you hear?
Three kings.
He's beat there. You, Wild Bill.
I mean, son of a gun, if he hasn't. I had you pegged for no more than two pair.
Yeah, Kendall ain't the best player I've seen, but he's sure a lucky one. Deal him out, Calamity.
All right.
No feller once in Hayes City drew two cards to a royal. Luckiest thing I ever seen.
That's a loco thing for a man to do.
Sure was. Took one look at his hand and keeled over plumb dead.
You know, I had a hand something like that. I won a Chinese girl with it a few weeks ago in Deer Lodge.
Chinese?
I did.
No kidding.
Sure.
What did you do with her?
Well, I gave her to a man I knew. He married her.
Open for a dollar.
Wait. Yes, I'm staying.
Stay? Me too.
I ain't proud. There. Cards?
Three.
Kendall?
Two, please.
Give me one. Now, here's a man's gonna drop dead if he pulls it right.
How's about you, Charlie?
Two.
Dealer takes three.
Honest woman.
That's one thing I ain't nor never hope to be. Your bet, Wild Bill.
Well, I'll tell you, friends, I'm gonna make this rough on you. $2.
All right. I call.
Not me. And I ain't dropping dead, neither. Well, I'll see you.
I'm a sucker. All right. What do you got, Wild Bill?
Prettiest two pair you ever seen. Aces and eights.
Wild Bill Hickok slumped forward on the table. He still had the winning smile on his face, and the cards crumpled in his tightening fist. It was Calamity Jane who found Jack McCall. He was hiding in a butcher shop nearby. Colorado Charlie and I dragged him away before she had a chance to use the meat cleaver she was holding. We found six cartridges in McCall's gun. The only one to fire was the first, the one that killed Hickok. The other five were defective. Before I left Deadwood, McCall was tried for murder, but Brady and Varnes must have chosen the jury themselves, because the final verdict was not guilty.
Frontier Gentlemen was written, produced, and directed by Anthony Ellis and stars John Daner as J.B. Kendall. Featured in the cast were John McIntyre, Jeanette Nolan, Jack Moyles, Larry Dobkin, Stacey Harris, and Vic Perrin. Music was composed and conducted by Amerigo Moreno. Again next week for another report from the Frontier Gentlemen. James Matthews speaking. This is the CBS Radio Network.
This show is supported by State Farm. Insurance is a part of any solid financial plan. Making sure you have the important things in life covered is one of the best ways to give yourself a little breathing room when things go awry. It's important to protect not only your business, but yourself as a business owner and all current and future team members. State Farm agents know what it takes to run and protect a small business because State Farm agents are all small business owners and they live and work in your community. So they're deeply attuned to what's happening with other small businesses in your market. If you have a small business and are interested in making sure you're protected, reach out to your local State Farm agent to learn more about what you need. They'll help you find the right policy at the right price for your business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
This Friday, discover why critics are calling Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes the best film of the franchise.
What a wonderful day!
It's a jaw-dropping spectacle that demands to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
We need to go.
Hang on.
It is our time.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters Friday. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
It occurs to me that in my reports to the London Times, there are many incidents which I have omitted, things seen and heard during my past 3 months in the American West. Here, then, some random notes.
Frontier Gentlemen. Herewith, an Englishman's account of life and death in the West. As a reporter for the London Times, he writes his colorful and unusual stories. But as a man with a gun, he lives and becomes a part of the violent years in the new territories. Now, starring John Daner, this is the story of J.B. Kendall, Frontier Gentleman.
These random notes are being written as I journey from Deadwood to Cheyenne on the Cheyenne and Black Hills stage line. I recall an incident in the Montana Territory town of Helena. A tall gentleman in high hat, black broadcloth frock coat, a dirty shirt with a torn paper collar, and a most singularly unpressed pair of nankeen trousers. He stood outside a saloon with a small case of bottles set before him.
Yes, sir.
About a dozen men and women were crowded around and a small yellow dog slumbering.
Magic, you have no say-I, not magic. Pollock's original Mameluke liniment, a sovereign remedy for man and beast. It is confidently recommended to the afflicted as an infallible remedy for the following diseases to wit: burns, cramps, pains in the joints, sore throat, frosted feet, rheumatism, spinal complaints, lumbago, old sores, cuts, bruises, swellings, sprains, pains in the back or side, headache, cutaneous affections, ague, cake, bites of insects or reptiles, salt rheum, mange, cracked hands, tetter, dysentery, cholera morbus, and cholera.
What about the heaves, mister?
The heaves, you ask? Ah, and in this bottle, the answer to your question, sir. Pollock's syrup of sassafras. A cure, nature's noblest remedy for heaves, consumption, bronchitis, croup or hives, colds, coughs, asthma, hoarseness, difficulty of breathing, purifying the blood, whooping cough, and a dozen ailments too horrible to mention in a public street. To any of you afflicted with any of the diseases I have mentioned, or some that I have not, don't delay. Get your bottle of Pollock's compound of syrup of sassafras, for it is certain to give more relief in a short time than all the sarsaparillas and other compounds the stomach could bear. Ladies and gentlemen, it costs only 25 cents for one bottle, or as an added inducement for your health,
Pollock's Original Mameluke Liniment and a bottle of Pollock's Syrup of Sassafras, both for the small sum of 40 cents. Think of the dollars and suffering you will save by this miraculous bottle.
I remember the game of baseball that I witnessed between two small Nebraska towns. Suffice to say that the match began at 2 o'clock. By 6 that evening, the score stood 97-25. And a gun battle ensued, which lasted for 3 days. I shall give a more complete account of that incident at a later date. Then there was the duel, fought between two ladies, rivals for the dubious hand of a swaggering young Lothario named Court Thompson. The entire town turned out for the event. The duelists were Matty Silks and Katie Fulton. They were to fire at 10 paces, and all was in readiness.
Well, sir, if you ask me, my money's on Matty.
Matty?
Ah, sure. Everybody knows Matty Silks. You mean you ain't visited?
No.
Now, I got $10, says she'll blow Katie Fulton's bustle clean out of the county. Yep. Aside from Court Thompson, Matty ain't standing for Katie's bar being on the same street. Oh, there's real bad feeling there.
Now, which is Court Thompson?
Fella standing next to Matty. Oh, he's a one, he is. You got to excuse me now, mister. I've been selected to count off the step. All right, folks, stand back. Let's get on with this here duel of honor. Matty, Katie, you know the rules. 10 paces, then I count 3 and you start shooting. Now, let's go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. There you go. Ready, ladies? 1, 2, 3.
You killed me! I'm shot! What?
It was Katie Fulton's shot that missed Matty Silks and hit Court Thompson. Some said she'd done it purposely, others argued that it was an accident. At any rate, Matty took the wounded Don Juan home. And as far as I know, their love burgeoned from that moment on. I must find time to send a more detailed report on Matty Silks. She's quite an extraordinary woman. Then I think of an old man, a miner I met in Fort Benton. His name was Shorthorn Tom. On our journey to locate his lost mine, he gave me an insight into Western speech which I have found to be most valuable. He was leading a balky mule along a winding trail, and the air was rather blue with
infection. I ain't really cussing, just sort of air in your lungs. Now you take that mule. I call him a son of a gun. No, that ain't rightly so, because anybody can see he ain't nothing but a son of a mule. But he's a no good son of a gun, because that's the way it goes, see?
Yes, I follow you. Oh, speaking of that, what exactly is son of a gun stew?
Son of a gun stew? Shucks, I'll tell you. That's just about the best thing a man ever put in his inside. It's got brains and sweetbreads. Oh, gotta be a fresh killed calf. Oh, gotta be. And tongue, liver, lights, heart, kidney. I tell you, mister, that is a something. Better than pooch any day. Yes, sir, when I find this claim, I'm going to get me a new set of teeth, and I'll show you how to make son of a gun stew. Throw everything in it except in the hair, horns, and holler. Oh, that's a real grub.
Sounds it. Now, tell me, what is hardtail?
Oh, just a mule, like this ornery stump-sucking son of a gun.
Hardtail, mule.
Correct.
Stump-sucker?
Ain't you never seen a horse getting his teeth against something and sucking wind? That's what a stump sucker is. Oh, you don't want nothing to do with a critter like that. No, sir.
I heard the expression riding herd on a woman.
Oh, that's what? Courting riding herd. Oh. Courting. Boy, you stick around old Shorthorn Tom. He'll have you talking as smart as a bunkhouse rat. You know what a woman is out in these parts?
No, what?
Calico, painted cat, sage hen, cow bunny, long-haired partner, quail, squawk. You know what we call a fella like you, green from the east? Tenderfoot, button, dude, prune picker, pilgrim, soft horn, a greener.
Yes, well, what about you?
Me? A rawhide, coffee cooler, pocket hunter, river sniper. Of course, fellas call me a lot of other things, too. It don't really matter what they call you, though. It's what you are that counts. Now, I take you for a good partner, mister. A real good...
Shorthorn Tom never did find his lost mine. He died up in the Highwood Mountains. I was with him. Then there was a performance of Otello that I witnessed in Kansas, the Frontier Theatrical Players. Otello was a fine, powerful fellow with a broad Texas accent, a cowhand recruited by the wife of a ranch owner. Needless to say, the wife played Desdemona. Unfortunately, Otello had a scant 3 days in which to memorize his part. The resultant scene, I report.
That handkerchief which I loved and give to you, I'll give it to Cassio.
No, by my life and soul. Send to the man and ask him.
I don't want no sweet talk, honey. I'll take heed of perjury, because you art on thy deathbed.
Aye, but not yet to die.
Yeah. So you confess freely about all that's in it. For to deny each article with oath, cannot remove or choke. Something that I do grunt. Honey, you all gonna die.
Mercy.
Amen.
And have you mercy too? I never did offend you in my life. Never loved Cassio, but with such general warranty of heaven as I might love, I never gave him token.
Look, I saw you. You know, the handkerchief. Everything.
He found it then. I never gave it him. Send for him hither.
He confessed.
What, my lord?
Well, you know, he been dealing off of the bottle.
He will not say so.
Well, he won't for a fact. Honest Iaga stopped his mouth.
Oh, my fear and turkey. What is he dead?
Had all of his hair been live, my great revenge had stomach for all of them.
Life he is betrayed and I undone.
Outstrumpet. Weep'st thou for him in my face?
Oh, banish me, my lord, but not kill me.
Down, strumpet.
Kill me tomorrow. Let me live tonight.
No, sir.
But half an hour.
Being done, there is no pause.
But while I say
it
one prayer.
It is too late.
Oh.
You take your hands off me, spoon, Sam, or I'm coming up there and rip the hide.
The player's conclusion had deviated somewhat from Shakespeare's intent, but I found it nonetheless dramatic. I've often wondered whether the Texas Otello continued his thespian career. He could have made a fortune in London. Speaking of fortunes, reminds me of an extraordinary thing that happened in Montana Territory. As soon as we reach the next stage station, I'll jot it down.
In a moment, we return to Frontier Gentlemen. A man sets an elaborate scheme in motion. He plans it so well that it can't be stopped. This proves ironic when the schemer is powerless to prevent the unexpected conclusion becoming his own victim. Hear John Lund in today's startling CBS radio drama of Suspense. Lund will play the fast-talking promoter who overplays his own hand. It's a story well calculated to keep you in suspense. Today on most of these stations. And now we return you to the Anthony Ellis production of Frontier Gentlemen.
The rocketing coach of the Cheyenne and Black Hills stage line had crossed into Wyoming territory. There seems no end to this incredible land of the American West. As the dark hills to the north and east fall away, the land becomes more rolling. I mention an event in Montana Territory that happened to a Chinese gentleman named Lee Chow. He was a well-educated man, scrupulously honest, and ran a general supply store in Helena. During the few days of my visit, I enjoyed several cups of tea and one or two chess games with him. I remember that one afternoon he seemed quite excited. His hand shook as he poured.
This is a momentous day for me, my friend, Kendall.
Oh?
You are the first to know. I am now an owner of a mine.
No.
Yes. Here, let me show you. There. A legal document which gives me possession of the Lucky Hand Placer claim.
Well, is it good?
Good. Oh, my friend Kendall, I have paid for it with my life savings. $40,000. You know that some men have been bringing me their gold dust to keep for them, as in a bank.
Yes, I remember you telling me.
It was their claim which I bought. I took much time, much trade talk, but finally they agreed to sell. And now I am a mine owner. As soon as I have made my fortune, Kendall, I shall return to China and live the remainder of my life in peace and security.
Lee Chow was evidently the last or next to last man in Helena to find out what had happened. I heard it 3 days later from the barber who was shaving it.
Well, man, this is the biggest joke in Helena since old man Hornsby strung up that mule for kicking his wife. You mean you ain't heard?
No, I really haven't.
Well, there's a Chinese gent along the street, Lee Chow.
I know him.
You know he bought himself a mine?
Yes, I know.
You know it's salted?
Salted?
He paid $40,000 for a salted mine. What the boys done was to take him a bag of gold dust every day to hold for them. Lee figures they got a whopper claim. He wants to buy in partners. No, sir, says they. Then when Lee's prime real good, the boys figures how they've done enough work and they're ready to sell out. Lee Chow buys for $40,000. The fellas take that dust and vamoose, leaving Lee Chow with a deed to a vegetable farm. That's all it's good for. Hold your head still, miss. I don't want to slice it.
Does he know yet?
If he don't, he's the only man in hell and I ain't.
What about the men who sold the claim to him?
Well, last I heard, they was head of the California.
Good morning, my friend, Mr. Kendall.
Good morning, Mr. Lee.
You appear downcast. Is something the matter?
I've just heard some rather bad news. It's about your claim.
Oh?
You've been cheated, Mr. Lee. Oh. There's no gold. The men who sold it to you knew it.
So? But I do not understand. Yesterday, my boys who are work for me, they bring me a sack of dust. Oh, here, see for yourself. It is the same as I have seen before, huh?
Your workers took this out of the claim.
Oh, it is just as it has always been. I do not understand this talk of cheating.
Neither do I, Mr. Lee.
Here, my friend, Ji Ping. He's a very fine miner work for me. Morning, Ji.
Good morning, Lee. Good morning, Arnold, sir.
How do you do, sir?
Oh, my friend here, Mr. Kendall, he is worried about the claim.
He worried? Why?
Well, there is talk of assaulting the mine.
The salt, then, is of gold. Here, from the work of yesterday, an ounce more than the first day.
I do not know from where you hear this bad news, my friend, Mr. Kendall, but if the rest of my life is as unfortunate, I shall indeed be a rich and happy man. Will you take a cup of tea with me? Perhaps a game of...
A day or so later, I left Helena and didn't return for about 3 weeks. And then it was only to spend an hour or so arranging for transportation to Fort Benton. I went to the store of Mr. Lee Chow and found to my surprise that it was closed. I walked to the barber shop. And over a hair trimming, learn what had happened during my absence.
Lee Chow, mister, you whisper that name around these parts. Say, ain't I seen you before?
Yes, I came in for a shave a few weeks ago.
Never forget a face.
Well, what about Lee Chow?
Oh, he's gone. China, they say.
What happened?
Well, he sold that claim of his.
Oh. Well, I'm glad to hear it.
Well, maybe you are, but there's a parcel of fellas around here who ain't. You know what that son of a gun did?
What?
Salted his mind.
But ain't that something? Everybody figuring Lee Chow an honest man, and he salts a mine. It shows you.
How? I mean, I thought the claim had turned out to be good. What do you call it? A bonanza.
That's what everybody thought.
Well?
You know what he was doing? Every day he had one of his coolies bringing a sack of dust. Made sure people saw it. After a while, fellas began figuring that Lee really had struck pay dirt. Couple of them went in to see Lee. He showed them a sack of dust.
Yeah, well, he showed it to me.
Well, sure he did. And he had one other sack. That's all he had. One he kept in the store, the other he give back to the coolie who bring it in the next day. It ain't nothing to laugh at, mister. Do you know what he done?
No, I haven't any idea.
Well, he sold that worthless bit of ground for $100,000. Yes, sir, $100,000. Then he skips off to China. Biggest swindle I ever seen in the territory. Fellas who bought it found out the next day. Ain't enough dust in the claim to cover a flea, but it was too late then.
I have thought of the outlaw, Dick Gillis, and the interview I had with him in Virginia City. He had been convicted of holding up a stage and the murder of two men. I only spent 5 minutes with him, but I learned a great deal. We talked in his cell, the marshal sitting outside at his desk, keeping a watchful eye on us. Gillis was quite proud to be the subject of an English newspaperman's report. Perhaps he colored his life for that reason. His language was, to say the least, unusual. And so were some of his thoughts.
I'm 36. 36 years out of a mother's arms I never knew. She went up Salt River when I was born. Savvy? My pa, he were a wicked old so-and-so. He used to beat the tar out of me. I run away from home when I was 10.
Where did you go?
Nebraska, Kansas, Colorado. I've been all over. I've seen more than most men see in 5 lifetimes. Less than I wish I had.
What made you start this, being an outlaw?
Man don't start, mister. Shucks, I was born outlaw. Did my first killing when I was 10. Shot me my pa's horse. That's how come I run away.
And why did you shoot his horse?
Well, I don't know. Because I guess the old varmint cared more for horse flesh than he did for his son. I sure hated that critter. If I hadn't killed the horse, I'd have killed the old man, that's for sure.
How many men have you killed?
Fair fight, 2. No matter telling it now, because I'm going to hang anyway. 7. 7 I killed in hate, for killing's sake.
Do you have a girl?
I got a wife. I ain't seen her for 3 years now. As a kid, too, but I never did go back. I guess it's how they'll manage along. You know, a man like me oughtn't to take up with a wife, nor kids. There's something all fired wrong.
Wrong?
A fella like me. I know I done bad. I know I'm gonna hang. There ain't no one gonna sorrow. Kinda wish that weren't so. What do you think?
I know what you mean.
If I had me a .44, I'd shoot my way out of here. And I'd head me for the hills and live, you know? Funny how quick a man forgets the smell of grass and sage. I should have been one of them poet fellas. I knew Jack Crawford once. You ever meet up with him?
No.
And you think of hanging. I sure never figured that when I was a kid. Not when you're walking around straight up. You sure don't think of that. I tell you something. I got me a feeling inside. Oh, it's twisted. Looped up like it. I'd like to ask you a favor, mister.
What is it?
You write what I'm telling you in that English paper of yours. You say maybe somebody sorrowed when I got my neck broke, huh? Make it up maybe like my wife or my kid heard and they sorrowed.
I will.
Day comes when a man gets to be alone. Ain't nothing more to look at except what's inside. I sure hadn't ought to kill that horse, you know?
These are some of the things that I have seen, heard, during these past 3 months in the American West. In a few days, I will arrive in Cheyenne, Wyoming Territory, where I shall send another report to the London Times.
Frontier Gentleman was written, produced, and directed by Anthony Ellis and stars John Daner as J.B. Kendall. Featured in the cast were Virginia Gregg, Jack Moyles, Peter Leeds, Vic Perrin, Joseph Kearns, Jack Crucian, and Winston Ross. Music was composed and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Join us again next week for another report from the Frontier Gentleman. John Wall speaking. This is the CBS Radio Network.
Thanks for joining us for 1001 Stories from the Old West. This is your host, John Hagedorn. We always appreciate reviews, and I've got a couple of reviews to share with you. The first, 1001 Stories of the Old West, 5 stars. John, love the podcast. I can't get enough of the Old West and its history. Bring on the Gunsmoke episodes. Take care. Guitar at Apple Podcast US. And this one, love the show, 5 stars. More Gunsmoke. I think these guys are trying to tell me something. Muleskinner 45, Apple Podcast, U.S. Thank you both for bringing us these reviews, and I will be bringing on more Gunsmoke. Right now, some Frontier Gentlemen. But soon, Matt Dillon, Kitty, Chester, and Doc. Thanks. Take care. We'll be back soon.
Thanks to State Farm for supporting this show and helping our listeners protect their businesses and lives. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.